Hello, listeners. Before this episode begins, I just want to give a quick disclaimer. My guest and I had some technical and audio issues for this episode. I think we were able to splice everything together and make it work, but I just want to give some forewarnings. There might be random jumps in the volume. It shouldn't do anything to blow your eardrums out, but you might hear some portions that are very quiet, then jump to very loud, and there was just some weird issues with Skype when we were recording this. So just want to give you all a heads up, and thank you all for listening, and let the episode begin. On this episode of Still Loading, ooh yeah! Hey guys, it's Josh, and welcome to the final episode of the 40 for 40 series here on Still Loading. And to wrap this entire thing up, I've decided to bring one of my best friends from podcasting, TJ from Two Guys in a Game and The Hotter Show. TJ, say hello to everyone.
What's up, everybody? Josh, it is an honor to be here, my man. I seriously appreciate the hell out of the invite and the fact that you think I'm one of your podcast best friends, and the feeling is mutual, good sir.
Dude, you totally are. Like, you were the first podcaster to actually reach out to me personally from, you know, what I think it was like Twitter or Instagram or whatever. But no, before you reached out to me, no other podcasters had. So it was really awesome to get to know another, you know, gaming enthusiast and whatnot. And I don't know, it's been an awesome, being able to talk to you and get to know you guys better.
Oh, same for me, man. It's been a wonderful journey. And when we did that episode of my, you know, my main solo podcast, The Hotter Show, which is not a gaming podcast, but when we did that, it was such a cool thing just to kind of get to talk with you. And, you know, we did two episodes of just us basically getting to know each other. And it was such a cool experience overall.
It really was. And I like that. I don't know. I just enjoy your guys' podcast. So I'm happy to finally have you on because you were nice enough to invite me on for one of yours. And I wanted to have you on for this game specifically. And the game we are covering this week is WrestleMania for the NES. And the reason I wanted you on specifically because I know that you're a wrestling fan.
I am. And when you approached me about this, because I'd been saying to you for a while, like, oh, you know, I want to come on the podcast, so whenever we can do anything, you know, I'd love to do it because I am a big gamer, but I'm also, you know, just love podcasting that. So I was like, anytime I can jump on, and when you came to me and were like, hey, so what do you think of this WWF WrestleMania game? I went, oh boy, but I was like, let's do it. Let's give it a shot. Let's play it.
I mean, whatever works. So Let's just start out in true Still Loading style. The box art. Now, I don't know if you have an image of it up on your screen, but the box art that I have on that I have in my hand just has Hulk Hogan in all his '80s glory, yes, ripping his yellow shirt off.
Hulkamania is running wild, brother.
I'll be honest. If I was a fan of wrestling as a kid, this would have appealed to me just because, like, it's right up. They got all the likenesses, well, as close as likenesses as the NES could.
It's literally perfect, yeah.
But, and I guess to start off, before we even dive into the gameplay, before we dive into anything else, I want to talk about who actually developed this game. Now, it was released by, published by Acclaim in 1988 for the NES. And the company that developed this has a surprisingly high pedigree of quality, though, spoiler alert for this review, this game is shit.
To put it politely, yeah, it's not very good.
but the company that made this, man, is Rare. You know, Banjo-Kazooie,
yeah.
Banjo-Tooie, you know, Donkey Kong Country, Donkey Kong 64, all those amazing games, they made this steaming pile of garbage.
And that's really putting it politely too, just to be quite blunt about it. And you know, It's funny because I didn't actually know Rare was a developer until just now. I made the mistake of looking on the Wikipedia page like as you were talking. So my reaction was not probably what you would hope, but considering that I was just playing Banjo-Kazooie the other day and then now jumping to that, it's like holy crap, what a difference. I had no idea that that was them. Like I had no idea.
And you wouldn't. Well, Rare is interesting because they have a really surprisingly large amount of games that they developed for the original Nintendo. Not all of them are all that great. I mean, just looking at some of the ones that I see right here, right? You have Slalom, which is a sports game. I didn't know what Slalom was. That is like it's a slalom races. Okay, so I had no idea what it was. It's like that skiing stuff where you see skiers go down, they have to navigate past poles and shit. Oh,
okay,
like that.
I got you.
I didn't know that was the name of it. Wizards and Warriors, which is a... they did Wizards and Warriors, which from what I've heard, is a pretty decent platformer. RC Pro-Am is a really popular racing game for the NES. They did the Jeopardy game. Wheel of Fortune and Anticipation. So they made they turned game shows into NES games.
That's actually insane. Like I had absolutely no idea they were involved even in the NES at all. I mean, that shows how much I don't know about gaming history, which is one reason why I love your show so much, because I can tune in and I learn something every single time I tune in. And even now that I'm on it, I'm still learning stuff.
Now, then this is the last one I'll say, because there's a one game I really love. They did Marble Madness, which is one of my personal favorite games on the NES.
Okay.
I'll send you a video of it. It's hard to really explain, in terms of with an audio format. But the thing that blows my mind that they made on the NES, now the reason we're also kind of digressing onto this, because there's not much to talk about with this game, but before we actually go into that, the thing that's like, I cannot believe they made a game on the NES called Taboo the Sixth Sense, and it's not a game. A quote from Wikipedia is a tarot card reading simulation developed by Rare. It's just tarot cards.
What even the hell is that?
This video game gives users a tarot card reading where the dealer, quote-unquote, automatically shuffles the cards. It is the only NES game to carry two warnings, that it's intended for player ages 14 and older, and the game is intended for entertainment purposes only. Taboo was marketed as a party game that multiple adults could enjoy simultaneously. What? This is... Okay, upon loading the...
I don't understand.
So, here's the gameplay of Taboo the Sixth Sense. Upon loading the game... the game requires input of the player's name, date, birth date, and gender. I don't know what that's dated. They probably mean sex now.
Yeah, very dated.
The game then...
If we just offended someone, Josh, apparently, what did you do that for?
I don't have time for this. The game asks, then the game generates a tarot card reading via the Celtic cross layout. These cards can be normal or reversed. Afterward, the player chooses the state that he/she is from and will be given lottery numbers accordingly. The game uses a whole tarot deck, which consists of minor arcana and major arcana, a total of 78 cards. It's literally just, it's supposed to like read your future. It's a tarot card reader.
Okay. So it's like, okay, tarot card. So it's like what's going to happen to me today? And you pull out the card and it's like, so is it tarot card as far as like, it has like your... You know, today you drew the angel card, or is it just literally like fortune telling?
I don't know. It doesn't really say. It just says...
That's freaking weird.
And the genre that Wikipedia puts in it is non-game.
That's so weird.
Which doesn't make any sense.
What the hell?
Come on, Rare. Like, I don't understand.
Get your shit together, Rare. Come on.
They definitely need to now.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But that's just so... I don't understand. That's one of the craziest things. They also made a fan classic. They made a fan favorite. They did Battletoads for the NES.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that either. Wow. That's kind of a fan favorite, but also a bit of a cult classic, is it not? Like, I mean, I know about it, but It's not an extremely well-known game, but that's I didn't know that.
They made a lot of, like, they developed a ton of games for the NES. They made Arch Rivals, which is a game I covered earlier in the 40 for 40 series.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Which I loved. They did, you know, WWF WrestleMania Challenge, which I guess is like some form of a sequel for this. Oh, I don't know.
That's like the biggest pile of dog shit.
Is it worse than this?
It's way worse. Like, so much worse.
I almost am afraid to try it. All right, so let's talk don't about the gameplay bother. Itself. You can choose from one of six different WWF at the time. Now it's WWE, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
All right, because I actually remember that. Apparently, they had to change it because WWF also stands for the World Wildlife Foundation.
That is correct.
And they changed it to WWE because of that. That's correct.
Unless, of course, you ask Vince McMahon.
He still refers to it as WWF.
I could be totally wrong on this. From what I can remember reading when that all happened, they wanted to change because the term federation was outdated.
That's weird.
Which, I mean, it was, because they weren't a federation anymore, you know. They were worldwide, so it's like, I get it, you know. But yeah, that is the real reason why it happened.
All right.
They did the whole Get the F Out campaign and everything, and yeah, it was...
The F Out campaign?
Yeah, Get the F Out. It was, they had these shirts that literally said Get the F Out, and it was,
you was know. It the was it actually fuck, or was it just like the letter F?
Just the letter F, but it was intending to say, you know, and I'm, like The Rock would use it in promos and shit, you know. You get the F out, and it was like it was just a really weird time period in wrestling, but yes, that is it was WWF, it is now WWE.
And the six wrestlers you can choose from are, of course, as we spoke before, Hulk Hogan, Rando Macho Man Savage, Andre the Giant, which is, even though I know nothing about wrestling, I just knew him from The Princess Bride, so I automatically love him.
Yes, yeah.
Honky Tonk Man, Ted Million Dollar Man DiBiase?
That is the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase.
DiBiase, okay. And then DiBiase, Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yes.
Now there's not really that much that, I mean, from what I could tell, all the wrestlers do about the same moves. Are there unique, did you see any new unique moves out of the individual wrestlers for this?
Kind of. It's hard because with this game, the number one thing is you pick your guy, you know, me, of course, I had to pick Macho Man Randy Savage that's just the kind of, ooh, yeah, dig it. Because that's just the kind of wrestler I like. I always love Macho Man. And I picked him. I go in there against the Honky Tonk Man, who is, you know, he's the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all times. But anyone who watches wrestling and watched wrestling knows that he's, you know, he's a legend, but he's kind of a loser. Like, that's, you know, he was never very good. He was good, but he was not, he didn't win a lot, basically, is what I'm trying to say here.
Who was this again? Honky Tonk?
The Honky Tonk Man.
Okay,
and he was a bad guy, and so he was a loser, basically, which is what I'm trying to say. So when I went against him with Macho Man, I'm like, oh, I should be able to whip his ass, like, you know, like, it's, that's just how it's supposed to go. And it was just like, oh, it was horrible. The collision detection in this game is basically non-existent.
It's all and over the place.
It's hilarious. But to kind of answer your question, I did play as Andre the Giant a few times, and he has very different move sets compared to everyone else. I mean, obviously, you know, because he's a big guy. You know, like Macho Man, if you press the strike button a couple times, he'll do like a drop kick kind of deal. Like, okay, he'll jump and kick, whereas, I mean, obviously, Andre the Giant's not going to do a drop kick because that's just not going to happen. So he just kind of like headbutts people, and some of them have a move where you can actually hit behind you, which is kind of cool. The only match I won, I was Andre the Giant going up against Honky Tonk Man, and the only reason I won was because I kept hitting him while he was behind me with his one move. But it was, but trying to do literally any move in that game is very tiring. It's just not easy.
I 100% agree. I'm looking at my manual finally, because as you know, I never look at the manual before I actually try the games out. just because I don't know, I'm an idiot, but I just felt like doing that. But they all have different moves. So, like, for example, we'll just start out there at the beginning. A Million Dollar Man, if you hit A, is punch. B is eye gouge. If you hit A and B together, you back elbow smash.
No, it's not, because I did that.
Well, no, sorry. It's
I call shenanigans.
With back to opponent, you have to hit A and B together with your back to the opponent. If you're facing your opponent, A and B does a body slam.
Okay, yes, that's true. That's correct.
When in running mode, if you hit A, you do a drop kick. I don't know, what's a turnbuckle? It just says...
Turnbuckle is the, you know, like you picture a ring, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the steel posts?
Okay.
That they have that holds the actual ropes up. So on those little posts, there's these little things. Basically, they're rings that hold the actual ropes together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you call a turnbuckle. And there's always padding over top of it, obviously. And when you go up on top of that and jump off, it's called a turnbuckle. That's what that is. So it's used for, like in the game, like Macho Man Randy Savage, you can use him. You can run up on top of that and jump off and do certain attacks and stuff. The only characters that you actually can't do that with are Andre the Giant and Bam Bam Bigelow, because they're, you know, the big guys. But that's actually freaking hilarious, because Bam Bam Bigelow was known for being a guy who went to the top rope all the time. That's actually kind of hilarious.
This is so strange. All right, so then if we keep going on from turnbuckle, you can do a turnbuckle leap with the B button. This is all for Million Dollar Man, by the way.
Yes.
And then if you pin someone, you press A plus up or down, and then it says C pin rules. And I don't feel like reading that right now. we were talking about Bam Bam Bigelow. A for him just naturally is a headbutt. B is a spin kick. When your back is to an opponent, A and B together does a back punch. B plus up or down does an eye gouge. You do a drop kick when you hit A while in running mode. You do a cartwheel if you hit B while in running mode, and then up or A plus up or down also does a pin. These controls, like, I understand, like, they were limited on their buttons, but they tried. God bless them, they tried, but I don't really think this works.
They did try. Yeah.
And I'm not going to read all of the moves, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's brutal. I mean, just. From the standpoint of talking about, like, the wrestlers that I use, like, just the fact that they talk about running mode, right? And running mode as a whole, like, it doesn't, like, really exist. Like, yeah, you can go into your running mode, but, like, you can't hit anybody.
Which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I'd be running at Andre the Giant, and, you know, he's the biggest target in the game. And when I perform a drop kick and I hit him, but I don't hit him, it's like, well, what the hell? And the next thing you know, he pins me and wins because, like, he's Andre the Giant. I'm like, well, shit. That does it. But then my biggest grievance is the fact that when I was, you know, whooping someone's ass, I wasn't doing any damage, really. Like, it was just like, I had one fight that it literally lasted like 20 minutes, dude. It was brutal. I was just, like, trying so hard to beat, you know, I was Andre the Giant going up against Honky Tonk Man, and, like, I'm literally just smacking him and headbutting him and, like, doing back elbows and all this stuff, and, like, it's just, he's not staying down, and I'm like, okay, I've been at this for 20 minutes, like, this is insane.
I watched a long play of this, and for people who are really good at the game, they actually beat there's not much of a story to it. It's just you play the tournament mode and then you become the world champion when you beat all the other wrestlers.
Yes. Yeah.
And it took the guy about 15 minutes. So it's like, you know, 3 minutes a fight approximately. Cause I think, yeah, that would make sense. I think I did that math right. It's about, yeah. So he just fought all the wrestlers, but it was just weird. Cause he was able to hit them so cleanly. And like you said, the hit detection in this is all over the place.
Yeah, I'm curious as to how the hell he did that, because, mind you, just for the record, for the fine listeners of Still Loading Podcast, if you guys are not familiar with me, I'm a huge over-exaggerator, just for the record. So that 20 minutes I was saying earlier wasn't probably actually 20 minutes. It's probably like more like 5 minutes, but it felt like 20 minutes. Just wanted to clear that up real quick.
And for I can't speak. And for my listeners, for me, I always take everything way too literally. I'm always like, wow, you know, I don't know. For some reason, I always feel the need to clarify. I need to work on that. I need to just let a joke sit instead of trying to clarify shit. I don't know. There's problems with me.
I don't think so.
But no, so the one thing I did like about the game, though, is I actually enjoyed the music decently enough.
I did too.
I thought the compositions were really good, even though the strangest thing, when I played my first match, I was... I don't remember who I was fighting. Oh, I know who I was fighting. I fucked up, and I didn't understand that, like, I was choosing my opponent. I thought I chose my wrestler. I chose Macho Man. And then he was still on the screen. I'm like, oh, so did I mess something up? I guess it didn't take. So I hit Macho Man again, and then all of a sudden it said Macho Man versus Macho Man. I'm like, God damn it. So now I'm facing myself. So I'm fighting him. And after about a minute or two of me fumbling through and trying to understand what the hell's happening, and all of a sudden the music changes, and I hear the Graduation's music, you know, that da 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 da. Yeah. Oh my God. I was like, why is that someone's theme? Is like, does Macho Man ever use the Graduation theme?
It is, yes. He uses Pomp and Circumstance.
Oh my!
Is the name of that composition, and he uses it as his theme song for years. So that's why you heard it.
That makes a lot more sense.
It's funny, yeah. That's why you heard it. But I wanted to just, on the topic of music, I believe it was a few weeks ago now. Last month, September 9th, I think it was, on episode 84. You had the guys from the No Geeks Allowed podcast on.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. James and Brian, shouts to those guys. And you were talking about the music for the NES and how they had to... I can't remember exactly what it was now you were talking about, but I was listening to it and it was tripping me out because I didn't know that they had to set it up a certain way because they only had so many...
And there was only four sound channels they could work with.
That's what it was. So the fact that they had the music in it and in this game, because it's such a... It's so intense, and there's so much going on with some of these songs, like Macho Man's, you know, Pomp and Circumstance. It's like, whoa, like, what the hell? I can't, that just tripped me out.
No, sorry, I just peaked a little bit. it's crazy what they were able to do with it, because, like I said in that episode, you know, they only had four sound channels, so one was generally for sound effects, and the other three were for music, so... They could only make one chord at a time. Now, thankfully, Pomp and Circumstance, you could literally just play the one chord the entire time because it's not anything else going on. But whenever you have like really tricky things, if you wanted to do like multiple chords or something, the best they could do is do that arpeggios, I think is the word.
Yeah, I want to see. Yeah, because I mean, you were talking about it where you were like, I think it's arpeggios is the... Yeah, they would like have three different notes or four different notes kind of... and they would arpeggiate them, and it would kind of make the sound of a chord, which is why that 8-bit music is so classic, because they really had to work on what they were, like, okay, we need to make songs that are good and they're catchy, but we don't have so much to work with. So they really had to
focus on the melody
super hard. Yeah, and that's something that's why that, you know, like, even to this day, 8-bit music has such a following, and I feel like that's why, and you really see it in this game big time.
There is, and I don't know these people personally at all, but there is a YouTube channel, and especially since, obviously, you're a musician. Do you still play music periodically? I know you have a guitar company, but do you still classify yourself as a musician, I guess?
I do. I mean, the guitar stuff I do, it's I just, like, repair them and stuff like that, but I do. I don't play as much as I would like to. I've been a lifelong guitar player and musician, so when I, you know, hear a certain melody or something like that, it's something that is really important to me, and it's something I can always pick out, and it's something I do talk about a lot on my podcast, The Harder Show, where I'll interview local bands and do album reviews and stuff like that. So it's something that I'm very, I'm definitely not an expert, but I am very versed on, just because I've been a lifelong diehard music fan, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to send you a link after we're done recording, but there's a YouTube channel called, oh my God, why did I just scroll past it? 8-Bit Music Theory. And
okay, yes.
This have you ever heard of it before?
I have heard of him, yes, but I haven't watched too much of it.
This guy breaks down like exactly how all the famous compositions from video games were arranged and talks about what the composer was most likely thinking and talks about it from a music theory standpoint, which I find interesting, but I know nothing about music theory. But it's a super fascinating it's a super fascinating channel. Just perfect example. The most recent episode was Chromatic Notes Are Goofy in Paper Mario, and it talks about the music from Paper Mario, which I have not watched yet, but that's just like the most recent. He did another one with How Koji Kondo Writes Creepy Music, and for those who don't know, whoops, sorry about my mic stand. For those who don't know, Koji Kondo is the guy who wrote all the Mario music and a lot of the Zelda music and things of that nature. So he's like Nintendo's go-to guy for
iconic music.
Yes. But oh my God, where did we go? Oh yeah, we were talking about the music from from WrestleMania. The music is surprisingly solid. Rare. What's really interesting, I need to find examples of this, but because Rare is a British company, and I've noticed European game developers for the NES could do really interesting things with the sound chip that you wouldn't really think were possible. I might, even though this is not part of this game, but just a perfect example, a European composer did the soundtrack for the NES game Silver Surfer, and while the game is shit, the music is like outrageously complex. I'll put in a little clip of that here. But it's just nuts what they were able to do with it. So is there anything else that you wanted to say about the music before we move on?
Not really. I mean, I think we've kind of hit the nail on the head with it. I definitely wanted to make sure I touched on it just because it was a really surprising thing, even for me, where, you know, unfortunately I was playing the game on an emulator. So some people might also go, oh, well, no wonder it was you couldn't make contact or it was shit controls or anything. And I'm like, well, you know, maybe, but I've played lots of game on emulators recently, and I've had no issues. So
no, it's not the emulator. I have the physical copy. I played the physical copy on my TV, and it was awful. Like, there is no excuse for it. The collision was fucked up. It was awful.
Well, even, like, getting off of the music and that, like, even just the game itself, you know, like, I expected, you know, okay, like, you can probably have a one-on-one or a tournament style or whatever, but like I was expecting, you know, maybe a tag team or something like that, and like it didn't have that from what I could tell. It was just like a tournament style, and I was like, okay, now what? And it's like, oh, that's it. Okay, like again, it's just, you know, because I guess it's because I didn't grow up with the NES. Maybe it's, to me, it's a disconnect where I'm like, man, like this was a really, there's not a lot going on here. You know, you have your six wrestlers and you have your few matches you can do, and it's like, okay, well, I guess that's that.
Well, I feel like, remember the NES was also super limited. So, I mean, the limitations thing, yeah, probably is just the idea that you didn't grow up with it. For the tag team thing, I mean, I'm sure there was ways they could have done it, but the NES was weird because since it's all cartridge, like a lot of the old consoles, since it's cartridge based, they could do some extra things. In like they added a lot of capabilities to the NES that the Nintendo did not have natively. So I wonder if they could have added something like that to the game, but that would have also increased their price, because Nintendo was, I don't know, maybe you've heard this on another episode, But Nintendo's business practices wasn't really the best with their game developers back then. In fact, they were not sketchy. They were up front, but they were dicks. They would do stuff like, for example, so the way it would work is that you would sign a contract with them. You had to buy your cartridges from them, and then you would pay all the distribution and all that stuff, which the distribution thing, fair enough. You know, it's your game. You're the one that wants to make it, so you have to distribute it. But how is that? But it's just insane. So what would happen is that you would have to buy the cartridges to, you know, put the game on from Nintendo directly, and you couldn't do it in small increments. So let's say you wanted a small run of, like, let's say 100,000 units, but Nintendo only sells it in lots of like 300,000 units. You had to buy a 300,000 unit lot, and that was it. You wouldn't, like, so you were just out those extra 200,000 carts or something like that.
That's insane.
Like, and you couldn't just negotiate for a smaller, like, consignment of them. It would be, you know, the 300,000 or bust. Now, I'm making up those numbers, but let's say it was a game that you knew would make money, but you knew it could only make money in a limited, like, a small run.
Yeah, say maybe 10,000 copies or something.
Exactly. Which, granted, that's, you know, that'd be, like, nothing. That's, like, less than the amount of people that live in a given city, but it's just nuts that they made them do things like that.
Yeah, that's really, I guess sketchy isn't really the right word. At least they were upfront about it, but just, yeah, I know in the beginning they were kind of, I guess dicks is the best way to put it about it. They were just like, hey man, you want to be on the Nintendo? Pay us, give us money. And did you know that in 40 years, we're going to make a console out of cardboard? What up?
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to be a Labo defender still. No one's tried it yet, so I don't think I'm ready to throw in the towel just yet. I'm going to try it out at some point, and if it sucks, then I will.
What's going on, man?
Then I will. I'm not gonna subscribe to the war, man. I believe in the lab.
I thought you were on my side. I thought that's what the deal was. I told the No Geeks Allowed guys you were on our side. I don't know.
I'm not choosing sides on this. I'm going to be my own side. You just wait. I have an idea to throw my gauntlet into the ring.
You're like Switzerland. You know, you're just
yes,
just hanging out. You know.
Well,
I told them you should just be the referee.
Oh God, no. If I was the referee, I would have told, at this point, I would have ruined it. I would have ruined all your fun. Be like, come on, guys, just try it. Stop being babies. You're all too afraid of cardboard.
Well, see, now here's the thing is I actually did try it. I'm pretty sure I'm the only one who did.
Yeah.
I tried it and I was like, what the fuck is this?
Like, now,
and the fact that the guy at the counter still couldn't even sell it on it. It was his job. And I was like, okay, so I give you $80. Well, I think it was more than that, actually. Way more than that. I'm like, okay, I give you all this money for these pieces of cardboard that I can make into stuff. He's like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, so I'm trying it. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is pretty cool, I guess, you know. And he's like, yeah, then you can buy this accessory for it and this and this. And I'm like, so that's like $200. He's like, yeah. I'm like, for what? Like, did you need to make this out of cardboard? Like, my issue with it is the fact that there is no way in hell that they need to be charging as much for it as they are. And I guess the fact of what you're paying for is it to be, because it's kind of like it's pre-assembled, right? So I guess that's really what you're paying for. You're not really paying for the materials. But it's like, I don't know.
There's a game cart with it. It's not just straight cardboard. You're also getting a game pack with it that you're getting a game that interacts with cardboard. I don't understand how that's not witchcraft.
Just see how stupid that sounds. I'm sorry. Like, I just, you're getting a game that interacts with cardboard. Just that soundbite in itself. I was like, what?
I think that's inventive. I mean, like, who else is thinking outside the box like that except Nintendo? Now, I will say, I'm not saying it's worth the $200. I 100% agree. Like, that's an insane sell to say, hey, yeah, just keep buying $200 worth of cardboard. It's going to be a good time. That's an insane sell. But did you see Nintendo announce that they're going, that you can make like a cardboard steering wheel that will play Mario Kart 8?
I did.
That sounds like a great idea. See, I don't understand why this is not a good idea.
It's not that it's not a good idea. I just, it, from a business standpoint, let's talk money for a second.
Well, from a business standpoint, it's genius for Nintendo because they're selling cardboard.
Exactly. Yeah, oh, no, for sure. Absolutely. And that's more what I was going to get at. I was going to lead into that. But, like, their business-wise, it is, to me, it makes perfect sense, but then it also doesn't make any sense because if I was Nintendo, I'd go, okay, I guarantee you that they're going to release, like, the Mario Kart Pro controller at some point, too, because I don't see how that cardboard is going to last. I just don't. You're going to make your cardboard steel one, you're going to use it, you know, 20, 30 times, and it's going to break.
Well, it depends.
I don't know, man.
I don't think so.
What if
I
it
think...
gets wet? You're screwed.
Well,
you're fucked. Man, back in my day, if you know how much fucking pop and stuff I spilt on my N64 controllers, and they were fine. Second you spill pop on the Labo, it's over. Done.
Well, then it just shows that it teaches kids to be less clumsy. I didn't spill stuff like that on my controllers. I'm just saying, I didn't have that issue. I did, however, consistently, like, if I had it was on the PS2 especially, it would be plugged in, and we had it, like, up above on the TV, so people were constantly tripping over it and pulling the PS2 off the TV. I'm amazed that thing still works.
Because, I mean, it was a ruggedly built system that wasn't made out of cardboard, because if you trip...
Well, they're not making the system out of cardboard.
If you trip and fall on the Labo, you're screwed. That's it. There goes your money. Done. Instantly.
Well, the thing is, though, they have, like, replacements for, like, $10.
Yeah, $10. You can just go to your local recycling center and get some stuff to replace it.
I would love to see you do that. All right, let's see how... No. Go to the recycling center, get free cardboard, right, and see how long it would take you to make the exact same thing from the Labo. That would be a really good YouTube video. I want someone to do that.
Maybe I will. Maybe I'll...
Don't waste your time.
You know what I'm going to do? Here's what we're going to do, okay? I'm going to get, because at my work, I got cardboard boxes all the time. That's, you know, and of course, I work with Kaz. So, like, every time he sees me with a cardboard box, he's like, oh, is that the new Labo expansion? So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to collect a bunch of cardboard one day at work. And then me and Kaz are going to get together at some point. I don't know when. And we'll just, like, create a Labo expansion. I don't know what we'll figure something out. We'll do something.
It'll be genius.
Good. You heard it here first, folks. I don't know when this is going to happen.
That would be really funny.
And we'll do, like, the two guys in a game Labo expansion, and it's going to be, like, I don't know. Oh, I know exactly what I'm going to do, actually. I just thought of it. I'm not going to say it, but I just thought of it.
Are you going to make, like, a replica human centipede, like, from the challenges?
No. Let's just say it was something else that we had talked about on the program. Let me put it to you this way. It's something that you will have to strap to your body in order to use. That's all I'm going to say. And it's going to be very not PG. And
I wouldn't have it any other way.
And that's just how, I don't know. I'm gonna try and make this happen. I'm gonna do my best.
Now, what did you try out with the Labo, just out of curiosity? Because I haven't tried it at all. So, like, for all I know, the only reason I haven't said no to it is because I haven't tried it. And it's like, I don't understand. The only reason I'm defending it still is because I don't understand all the hate for people, like, with people that people have for it without trying it. But then, like you said, you tried it. So I'm curious, like, what exactly, like what did you try with it?
The number one reason why people hate on it, just for, I mean,
well, I get it. It's cardboard.
Yeah, at the end of the day, my hatred on it, for the most part, is tongue in cheek. You know, like, you're never going to see me buy one because I do think it's ridiculous. But
yeah, it's cardboard.
It's, I mean, come on, like, come on, like, really?
Well, the way I figure it, it's $60 for a brand new game. Any brand new game, period, is just $60. So if you take that into account, $60 of that is just going to the game cart itself. The other 20 is the perforated cardboard that's prepped and already ready to assemble for you. So realistically, the cardboard is $20. So is it worth $20 to you?
You know how much it takes to make cardboard and how much that costs?
Like a penny.
Probably like, I'll say 5 cents probably for a sheet, you know? So if you do the math real quick, I mean, they're their profit margins have got to be amazing with the Labo, so I give them credit for that for
sure.
Well,
in terms of raw materials, it's a penny. I don't know how much, like, I honestly don't know. Like, is it cheap to make all those perforated edges in the specific patterns? Or, because, like, they definitely have to have, like, some kind of an assembly line, just, you know, like, crank that shit out, you know, just have a bunch of razors coming down from, like, a press and just, like, slice into it.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, it's, at the end of the day, like, it is a cool thing, you know, but just, maybe it's because if you notice, all the people that are hating on it are all, like, older gamers, you know?
Yeah.
People who grew up with the real systems, you know, and now it's, like, I also, look, I'm not a huge fan of the VR stuff.
Neither am I.
It's cool, but, like, you know, that's not why I got into playing video games, you know? But to answer your question from earlier, I played the piano thing, which I will admit was pretty cool. And I did say that on Two Guys in a Game because I was kind of trying to defend it to Kaz a bit. Well, I was like, dude, like, you know, this kid walked up to it and he started playing it. And, like, the kid was playing music. Like, it was teaching him how to play a song. And I was like, that's cool. And then it broke right there in the store. Stopped working. And I was like, oh.
And the guy's like, the problem.
And the guy was like, oh, yeah, it happens all the time. What? Like, no, you're not supposed to say that. You're supposed to say this is a fluke thing that's never happened before. And then I tried the, there was, like, the fishing one. And, again, yeah, it was kind of fun for a couple seconds, but
not $80 worth.
Not for that's my issue with it, is just the price tag. I don't know.
Way I figure it. So, like, did you play 1-2 Switch at all?
I did not. No.
Would you say that game is worth, from what you've seen of 1-2 Switch, or have you seen any of it?
I'm gonna be brutally honest with you. I have not seen anything for it because I'm the worst gaming person in the world.
So 1-2 Switch was supposed to be kind of like the Switch's Nintendo Land, like when the Wii U came out or whatever.
Okay, I follow you. I follow you.
It was supposed to be like that, and it just—I mean, it's fine. Oh God, it's fine, but it just—it's strange how it works. But in any case, it was supposed to be like their Nintendo Land, and it's just a bunch. It's just a collection of mini games. That's all it really is, and. Essentially, what I gather, the vibe I kind of get out of the Labo is that it's kind of like 1-2 Switch, but with cardboard. And I'll be honest, 1-2 Switch is not worth $60. I bought it from someone who I got it for only $20. So, like, let me say it this way: if the Nintendo Labo, I will agree, $80 is way too high of a price tag for cardboard. If it was, I'm gonna say, 40 to 50, I think that would be that's worth the value.
If it was even that much, I would feel better about it. I don't know. In my experience with it and in my life, I have not heard anything good about it at all. Everyone I know who's gotten it has been disappointed. So
that's some good endorsements then.
It's just, I don't know. When it comes to Two Guys in a Game, Kaz and I, when we turn the microphones on, we turn ourselves up to 11. So sometimes we say things, you know, we play characters on that podcast. You know, I am, you're currently talking to TJ Hodder, not Hodder, who is a whole other entity of a being.
I love your guys' characters on that podcast. I do. As much as, like, I'm, like, kind of ragging on the Labo hate, it honestly makes me laugh so hard with how, like, I don't know, I like Kaz's over the top shenanigans and you desperately trying to reel him in consistently and it not working, like, at all.
Well, it's really funny because he's been on his best behavior lately, and I don't know what changed, I don't know what's happened, but the last, I'd probably say, 3 or 4 episodes, he's been, like, obviously the tangents are still there, you know, but...
Well, that's what makes you guys you.
Yeah, he came to me the one day, and this is an exclusive, but he came to me the one day and said, I think I want to retire the Tangent King. And I said, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, I still want to do tangents, but he's like, there was one episode he listened to, and he was like, I basically completely cut you off, and, like, I was talking about stuff that had nothing to do with gaming the entire episode, and he's like, it was stupid. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then, like, the next three or four episodes we did was, like, I feel like it's our best work just because, you know, don't get me wrong, we still do tangents, but we're not – it's tangents that make sense, I think. Unless I'm the one that goes on them, then it makes no sense, but that's...
Well, I feel like he's allowing... instead of forcing the tangents to come out, like... Because I feel like when you have a moniker that you kind of created for yourself, and that's not an insult. I don't mean that as an insult in any way, shape, or form. But, like, when you create something for yourself, you kind of feel the need to live up to it. I would say even more so if, like, your audience creates it for you, so... I don't know if, like, the tangent came from Kaz or if it just came from people's comments on tangents.
Well, the whole tangent thing, it was just literally, because that is Kazdo Jones as a human being. That's just how he is, even in person in real life. You know, we'll be talking about something, and next thing you know, we'll talk about something else, and I'm like, oh, well, what just happened? But I'm the same way. And it was just, there was a few episodes that got, like, it was so bad. But it was still enjoyable. It wasn't like people were like, oh, this sucks. That's not even remotely at all what happened. It was just, they were like, you know, he's like, just he just goes on these tangents that are so funny. And some of them are so left field. You're like, what the hell just happened? But then, you know, we always make sure we get back to what we were talking about. It's just, you know, it was such a thing that's, it's so intense. And I feel that he was so good at it. And just the one day, I literally think he just said, you know, I'm proclaiming myself the Tangent King. And I was like, cool. that's that. But it's definitely something that he kind of came to be known as, and we came to be known as that, you know, as the, you know, hashtag worst gaming podcast ever, because it's a gaming podcast. And sometimes there'll be 20 minutes before we even talk about a video game. But
nah.
But that being said, you know, the banter and us being goofballs and, you know, trying to be funny and generally speaking positive and trying to make sure everyone's having a good time. That's what people were tuning in for, and that's what people come back for. And that's what we do. And I mean, if we can kind of keep it a little bit more on topic, I think that's great. And I think that, like I said earlier, you know, some of the last few episodes we've done, I feel like is our best work just because of that reason. But, yeah, he did kind of proclaim himself the Tangent King, but it was also kind of given to him a little bit. So sometimes, and he even admitted that to me, where he's like, I feel like sometimes I have to. And I'm like, but you don't have to. You can just talk about what you want to talk about, you know?
I mean, as much, I give the audience as much respect as possible, but at the same time, it is your show. Like, if they don't like it, they can just leave. Like, you, the people who like you, in my opinion, like, the best podcasters are the ones who let their personality shine through, whether through the characters they're portraying or through the content they are making. And true fans are the ones who's going to stick around because they enjoy the type of person that you are, not necessarily. And if they don't like something about it, like, it, you know what, it happens. Like, I listen, there's tons of podcasts that I love to listen to, and if they talk about a topic that offends me, or if they talk about something that I don't like, I just ignore. Like, I still listen to the podcast. It doesn't turn it off from, like, I don't turn it off, but I'm offended, so what? Like, it, I don't know. Like, I understand there are certain lines that should never be crossed. I'm not saying that.
Oh, of course,
but
yeah.
And especially with all this stuff, it's all tongue-in-cheek anyway, like you said. So if anyone's really upset about that, like, I understand if you say something truly offensive and awful, then yeah, there's a reason behind it. But if it's just like, you know, they don't like how you, like, the tangents, or they don't like this or that, then I don't know. I mean, it should be what you guys want to do. So if Kaz was tired of doing the tangents, then he's tired of doing the tangents. If he wants to do more tangents, I mean... Yeah, then if the tangents bother you that much, then stop listening.
Well, that's it. I mean, there's been a few people who, you know, have said to me, like, I like the podcast, but I don't like the tangents. I said, well, then you don't like our podcast. Because that's, yeah. Like, they're like, no, but I do. I'm like, but you don't. Because that's a part of who we are. Because we're just, you know, the characters of Hodder and Kaz are these two, you know. At the end of the day, you know, Hodder is me, but he's me again turned up to 11, and, you know, I definitely steer the ship And at the end of the day, as far as offensive stuff and that, I mean, you know, I am the one who edits it. So if there's anything that, you know, Kazuto Jones may or may not say that I go, oh my God, did you seriously just say that? You know, I can always go through and edit it, but actually it was
so. How often have you had to edit something out?
Not very
often. Without giving specifics.
Not very often at all. I think it's maybe happened once or twice, I think. And it wasn't even necessarily that it was that bad of a thing he said. It was just in context, it sounded really bad. You know what I mean? Like sometimes you say something.
No, I know
100% like,
what you mean.
Yeah. So it's happened, and it happened. I'll tell you this story, because it's just because we're on the topic. It's kind of funny. Very recently, a few episodes ago, I was trying to give a shout out to someone, and it's not a big deal, and this is not like a big thing or anything, but I was trying to give a shout out to someone, and we were both in a really weird mindset that day. We were both really tired. It was just like, it was still a good episode, but just we weren't quite fully ourselves. And I was trying to give a shout out to someone, and he basically made a joke, as 9 times out of 10 he does, and he didn't really necessarily mean anything by it, because he wanted to transition into something else, so he was trying to transition into it, and it was just the way that it came off, where it was like, oh shit, like that could easily offend that person, like, and so I was like, okay, I'll just edit it out, but I forgot to edit it out. So,
and then it got released.
Yes, and luckily, they took it like a champ, and they were not offended at all. They actually thought it was funny. I'm not going to say what it was, but they were genuinely cool as hell about it, and because it could have easily like offended someone just because of the day and age we live in. You know, it's would it have offended someone 5 years ago? Probably not. But it was just a little throwaway thing that didn't mean anything. You know, and it was just funny. Like I just talking about that, like that was an incident where that would have been one of the like 2 or 3 times where we had to cut stuff out. Like, it's really rare, very rare that ever happens.
I've only ever had to cut out things once, and it was actually with the No Geeks Allowed guys.
I was just about to say, I fucking bet it was with them.
And it really wasn't, like you said, it really wasn't anything, and it wasn't even directed at anyone. It was. And the reality of it is that, and I know, I don't even remember what it was specifically anymore, but I think I tried to make a point about how sexist something was, and the way, and it wasn't them, it was me. I tried to make a point about how sexist something was, but the way it came off, I just sounded sexist in a way, and it had nothing to do with the conversation, and like, I don't know, I think I said it originally just to make myself sound woke or something like that, I don't know.
#woke.
I know, right? So I cut it out because I'm just like, this is unnecessary, like it doesn't benefit anybody's cause, it just kind of, I don't know, when I was listening back to it, I'm like, I sound arrogant on it, and it didn't sit right with me. Mm-hmm. So that was the only thing I've ever really cut out that I can remember. I'm sure there's been other stuff where like if I have one of my closest friends, Justin, when he comes over to record an episode with me, our sense of humor isn't always the cleanest. So there would be times where like we'll say something under our breath. I'm like, and afterwards I'm like, I got to edit that out. I got to edit that out.
Yeah. And but I mean, that's part of it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I try to, I don't know. I like having like a interesting sense of humor and whatnot you know what I mean? But when it comes to like podcast stuff, I have to be, because people don't know you. People don't know you from your person. Not like, because even if you're like doing the best representation of yourself on a podcast, like I always try to represent myself as accurately as possible. But, you know, when you're a content creator of any sort, you're always kind of putting on a show in some way, shape, or form. So you're always like yourself adjacent in some weird way. And so since you're never going to be 100% yourself, because you're, you know, trying to be a showman, trying to be entertaining and stuff, people don't know you all that well. And even if they do know you, like a joke, like if I say a joke that could be offensive to a friend of mine, they'll know I'm joking and they know I'm not serious. But you throw that shit out there online, you don't have the context anymore. You just have the aftermath.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You have to be so careful.
So, like, as much as I hate the political correctness culture now, because I feel like it stifles a lot of creativity and it stifles a lot of it hurts people's careers that they had no intention of meaning what it's supposed to mean. But at the same time, that's placing all the blame on the people being offended, which, don't get me wrong, like, there's some of it there, but at the same time, can you really expect people to understand your intention when they don't know you? You know what I mean?
Oh, like, 100% I agree with that, because, like...
Like, yeah.
Well, that's like I said, like, you know, when it comes to two guys in a game, like I've said a bunch of times in this podcast, you know, we are characters. And, you know, like, people ask me all the time, how is Kaz in real life? And I'm like, you know what? Kaz is a wonderful guy. He's one of my best friends. He's the nicest guy in the world, you know. He great sense of humor. And you pretty much get him, but you get him turned up. Like, his... Because some people have said, like, he kind of sounds like he's an asshole a little bit sometimes. And I'm like, that's Cazador Jones. You know, that's not him in real life. Like, he's not like that. You know.
Sorry, just had to close the door. My dog was about to come in. We'll edit that out later. Yeah, nice. Sometimes, like, I've, like, listening to Kaz on the podcast, I've definitely had that opinion myself, but the way you talk about him, like, outside the podcast, and even just, like the story you just told, like, how he was willing to retire the Tangent King title completely, it kind of shows, like, it shows, like you said, he's not the same person on the podcast that he is himself.
Oh, for sure, yeah, and I mean, that's something that,
Oh my God.
And that's something that's, like, with him in real life, like, he's even said to me before, like I had him on the Hodder Show, and actually very recently, episode 180, I had him, and then I had my co-host from my other podcast I co-host, Mike's and Beers. Yes. I had him, so I had the heel Ryan Wood and then Cazador Jones in the same room. And what was really interesting about that was Cazador Jones did not show up that day. Zach showed up, which, of course, is his real name, which is really creative, I know. You know, Zach Kaz. And it was such a cool chat, because it was the heel Ryan Wood, who, again, he is a character. You know, Ryan in real life, again, he's just one of the most genuinely good people I've ever met in my life. But, you know, sometimes he can come off as a real asshole on the podcast, because that's... He's the kind of the yin to my yang. Like, I always try to come off as, you know, don't get me wrong, I could be an asshole sometimes too, but, like, generally speaking, especially on Mics and Beers, I'm just like, I'm just there to have a good time. I'm just hanging out, you know, whereas sometimes he's like, no, you got to do this. Like, don't do that. Like, so he kind of plays that character a bit. And I think that so long as people know that you're playing a character, sometimes you can get away with stuff, but in the sense of, like, what you were saying earlier about how you're always kind of putting on a show. I've gotten myself in trouble with the Hodder Show a couple times with people, because with that podcast, I'm not really putting on much of a show. Like, that is as real as you're going to get. Like, the person I am on my show is me in person. Like, I talk the same, I sound the same, I make the same stupid, lame jokes and then laugh at them. You know, it's just, that's me. So, with two guys in a game, there's stuff I've said that I've kind of gotten away with, because it's, oh, well, that was Hodder, that wasn't me. And then, you know, there's TJ from the Hodder Show, who, you know, sometimes I say stuff and I'm like, shit, I'm not going to be able to get away with that.
That's interesting you say that, because I don't think I've heard a single thing. Now, granted, I listen to Two Guys in a Game a lot more than the Hodder Show, but I don't think I've heard a single thing that you've said as Hodder on Two Guys that could be even construed as offensive. Kaz says a bunch of stuff that, but, like, I know he's not serious. But, especially with all his Mexican jokes.
Oh my God. Well,
I know he's not serious. Yeah. Just for all those listening, he is not serious. He even calls himself out on the racism on the episodes all the time. Yeah. And he makes it a joke acknowledging the racism of it.
Well, and at the end of the day, it's, you know, he has one of his dearest friends is of Mexican descent, which is why he makes those jokes. It's for them. Like, whenever he makes a joke about something, 9 times out of 10, it's for somebody or it's directed at someone we know that listens to the podcast. So
it's the best kind of joke.
Yeah. So, like, we never, ever, ever go too far over the top. Like, I think we toe the line sometimes, you know, and I think that's acceptable. I think that's fine. It's making sure that you don't say anything really, you know, just too over the top. And I mean, you know, I make a conscious decision every time I press a record button to make sure that I try to be as positive as possible, because at the end of the day, like, not to turn this into a sappy moment or anything, but like, there's enough bullshit in the world and there's enough negativity that it's like, I don't want to tune into a podcast and listen to someone be racist or listen to someone say something that offends me or even listen to someone just be overly negative all the time about something. Like, it's just, I don't personally like that. Like, I don't need that in my life. So it's okay. What do I need? I want to turn on a podcast and laugh and just go, oh my God, like, what a bunch of goofs. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I like. That's what I want. So that's what I feel that, you know, we provide with Two Guys in a Game. And sometimes you want to turn on a podcast and be entertained and laugh, but also learn something and have someone who knows what the hell they're talking about when it comes to the gaming world. And that's why people turn into your show.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't think my show's actually that funny. I try to be funny and I just end up saying everything so dryly, but you know, I still enjoy it. I make myself laugh, and that's all that I think that's important.
Maybe it's because going to say real quick, maybe it's because I know you more now that, like, sometimes you'll say stuff and I'll just giggle because I'm like, oh my God, like, because I know that it's like, okay, that was a joke, and I'm like, you have such dry in a good way, like, delivery, that it just always makes me laugh. But anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're good. You're good. But no, I figure we should probably wrap this up because we stopped talking about WrestleMania about 20 minutes ago.
I apologize. That's just how it goes.
No apologies necessary. It's been a hell of a good conversation. I've loved this so far.
Yeah, me too, man.
I guess to wrap it up, do you have any final thoughts on the WrestleMania game?
Pretend it doesn't exist.
I like it. No. Bury your head in the sand.
At the end of the day, you know, good music. The graphics aren't god-awful for the time period, you know. Everyone kind of looks like themselves.
Kind of,
you know. Controls are god-awful. It's kind of unplayable, but if you're looking for a cool game to add to your collection, if you're a collector or you're a wrestling fan, still check it out because it's, you know, it is a cool game for what it is. It's just, by today's standards, obviously, it does not even remotely hold up.
No, I 100% agree. It's just meh. That's the best I can say about it. It's just meh. But all right, so that wraps up this episode of Still Loading. Thank you, everyone, for listening. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Still Loading Pod on all of them. You can also email me at stillloadingcontact@gmail.com. TJ, what would you like to promote? Any social media stuff?
I guess the easiest thing to do, if you want to check out Two Guys in a Game, you can find this wherever you find your podcasts, as well as The Hotter Show and Mics and Beers. As far as all social medias, Two Guys in a Game, we have all three, Facebook, Instagram, Two Guys in a Game Podcast, Twitter, Two Guys AA Game. The Hotter Show is just The Hotter Show everywhere, and Mics and Beers is just Mics and Beers everywhere. And really quickly, also, you can check out the network that I run and I'm part of, podbeardnetwork.com. Check it out. Check out all the shows. We try to always be positive and have a good time and entertain. That's what we live for. So definitely, seriously appreciate any support. And Josh, thank you so much, my man, seriously, for having me on. I really appreciate it. And I've had a lot of fun. And I'm honored to have been a part of the last episode of the 40 for 40.
Yes, I can finally get out of the reins of the Nintendo. I can go to modern stuff. I can
Spooderman.
I plan on doing that one soon. I plan on doing a bunch soon. But some quick shout outs, of course, Two Guys in a Game and the Hotter Show. Also shout outs to the Apex in the Abyss, Christian and Damon's Amazing Nerd Show, No Geeks Allowed. That's KNOW. No Geeks Allowed. Singing Mountain, which he still doesn't know who I am, but I like his podcast. Go check that out. It's an awesome video game music podcast. And I know I'm forgetting someone. Why can't I think of it? Oh, Drinks with Larry, of course. How could I forget
it's
those
Drinks
guys?
With Larry. Drinks with Larry.
The Drinks with Larry crew. Fantastic podcast. Yes. And I think that wraps it all up. So thank you all for listening. TJ, thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you, man. Again, seriously appreciate the hell out of it, dude.
And I will see you all next time. So that will wrap it up for the 4440 series. Sincerely, thank you all for listening. It's been an amazing ride. I've loved doing this series and learning about all these different NES games. I do plan on recovering these, you know, a couple years down the line, because I only really got to give it a 20 minute try on each of the games. And listening back to some of the episodes, I'm just really not happy with how I covered them. So I will redo some of these in much better and much more detail. So yeah, look forward to that, but that's not going to be for a little while. I've been in the NES for a while. I'm looking forward to do some modern games. I'm looking forward to do some Sony games, some Xbox games. There's just a lot of stuff coming up, and I'm really excited to be recording it all for you and just, you know, doing this, because this podcast has been one of my favorite things to do. You know, between work and all the stresses of life, it's kind of nice being able to record something that, even if not a lot of people listen to, though, for those who are, thank you all. You're all rock stars in my book. But it's just nice to be able to kind of have that one thing where you can just kind of go and just talk about something you love. And I love video games. So seriously, thank you all for listening to me rambling about all this stuff. And thank you for listening to my friends and I ramble about these things. And I guess to kind of end on a shout out, sort of, shout outs to all my guests throughout the series, the 4440 series. My friend Andrew started out the whole series on the Abadox game, which he hasn't come back yet, but I would love to have him back on. My Justin for the Mega Man games, Casey for being on so many times, especially during the month of Mario. And then finally TJ, of course, he was my final guest. So I'm really looking forward to moving on, though. I got a lot of stuff planned. I got a bunch of games in the pipeline that I want to cover. I've been playing and beating a lot of games in the meantime while doing this 4440 series. So I'm excited to review some of them. And I have an end-of-the-year idea that I'm looking forward to recording and sharing at some point. So, all right, guys. Seriously, thank you all for joining me on this journey. It's been truly amazing, and I cannot wait to show you what's coming up next. So, thank you all, and I will see you all once again. I will see you all next time.